The subject at hand is the internet, its benefits and its dangers. I work on the internet for a living, and I have done that for the last 15 years. Website hosting, web design, email, networking. Before I started working on the internet, I played on the internet. It was a research tool and a pastime since 1993, you know, back way back then, before most people had even heard of the internet. In 1993, my dad couldn't program the VCR, but by this point, even people in their 90s are going online just to email their grandchildren, if nothing else. You know, we've got wireless internet here in the church building. I've got the internet on my phone. So the last thing I'm going to do, talking about the dangers of the internet, I'm going to stand up here over the hill 35-year-old and tell you all to get off my lawn. I mean, get off the internet. I'm not going to stand up here and say, the internet's bad, don't use it. It's got tools and it's got information that's virtually indispensable in the modern day. On the other hand, it's a vile cesspool of evil depravity. Let's start off with some of the good things about the internet. Information. The main purpose of the internet was not originally supposed to be pornography. It was supposed to be information. So you have websites such as Wikipedia, a great online resource. Not that it's always accurate, but when you do research, whether casual or in-depth, it's a great place to start. Besides Wikipedia, there's millions of other web pages that by either companies or individuals who are just freely disseminating information, whether it's something incredibly useful or something that's just related to pop culture related to somebody's hobby. Sometimes it's full of stuff that you would normally have to go to the library for, or you would have had to go to the library back in the day when people actually still went to the library. You know, my favorite is there's tons of information on there that you would never even find in a library. I mean, where would you go? Where would you look in the library to look that up? But it's on the internet. Everything you want is on the internet. I didn't have a dad teach me how to tie a tie to look nice for church. Internet says, here's how you tie a tie with diagrams and videos and everything. So whatever you want, it's on there. Almost. Every once in a while, there's something that's not there. But most of the time, there it is. When it comes to religious matters, there's lots of valuable, useful websites. There's the Christian Courier website by Wayne Jackson over in East Main Congregation in Stockton. Got tons of useful articles. When it comes time to preach a lesson, you don't know what to preach on. Sometimes just go start looking through the articles. Maybe you don't find anything you want to preach on, but in the meantime, you're learning a lot. You got Apologetics Press, another great site by members of the church. You got crucial tools like BibleGateway.com, where you can get whatever translations of the Bible you want. It's all free. You don't have a Strong's Concordance, one of those giant, exhausting concordances, the giant books. You don't have one of those? It's online. You need to know the definition of a Greek word? It's online. You want to know what denominationalism teaches about a topic so you can refute it? It's online. Then there's lots of practical information on the internet as well. In the old days, we used to use paper maps and the yellow pages. Now we have Google Images. You know, look, there's the church website on Google Maps. We got GPS. We got review sites. You want to find a place of business. You don't have to even call them to ask when they're open. It's on the internet. You got reviews, so you know if you even want to bother to go there or not. Instead of having to drive 20 miles to a store to find out if they have a product that you're after, you just order it online with free shipping. Of course, one of the most common uses of the internet, communication. In the early days, there was something called Usenet. Really old people, you know, on internet-wise old, may recognize the Usenet. It's been mostly replaced by message boards. Email, of course, indispensable for business use. Half the stuff that I do is fixing people's email, because without it, their business can't do any business. For personal communication, we had email, and we switched to MySpace. That's dead now. We got Facebook, Twitter, Google Plus on the scene. When we were gearing up for our VBS, Matt said, I'll let everybody know on Facebook. When we were going to do the youth fellowship, I'll tell everybody on Facebook. Instead of writing letters to people or even making phone calls or even sending email, go on Facebook, youth fellowship. And all of a sudden, a big giant group of people knows. In so many ways, the internet is a blessing. It's got great information, it's got great tools. Matt goes to school on the internet, I do my job on the internet. Even my phone works on the internet. It plugs right into the internet, and it's voice over IP. I sit in an office by myself, apart from about one day a month. The people that work under me that I manage on the web design team, I do most of my managing on the internet. I am them and email them stuff. Do this, do that. I don't do any actual work myself. I just tell them what to do over the internet. Do my shopping on it, stay in touch with people. If I'm actually going to ever leave the house, research where I'm going to go using the internet, do all my shopping. It's so massive and useful these days, I'm surprised when there's something that's not on it. I found a little bracelet at Walgreens, you know, that I got for my daughter, and I wanted to get another one in a different color, and I went on the internet, nothing. They didn't have it. I said, I found something that's not on the internet, a little $5.99 bracelet. And I have good Google Foo, but I couldn't find it. But that's the exception. That's what's surprising. All right. You don't need me to tell you what's good about the internet. We're really here to talk about the dangers. I just wanted to say all that so you would know that I'm not really some like neo-Luddite, you know, that wants to smash modern technology and go back to card catalogs in the library instead of computers. But the fact is, the internet has made quite a number of things much worse since its inception, and Christians have to be careful with how they use it. So there's several major problems with the internet. The first is simply that it provides access to a great deal of evil material. Because of the way that the internet was designed, when it was created, the way that it was built, that fact has always been inevitable. For the most part, activity on the internet is not regulated. Sure, you sometimes hear about people getting arrested for possession or distribution of child pornography. And very occasionally, people get sued for file sharing, not for downloading, but for uploading and making it available to others. That's about it. The laws of the land have lagged years or decades behind the technology that's available. The government is not controlling what's on the internet or who has access to it. So an individual can put basically anything they want on the internet, you know, with a very few exceptions, without any fear whatsoever of civil retribution. And certainly people can view anything, you know, putting things on the internet, you might open yourself up to something, but viewing things on the internet is almost completely unregulated by anybody. Now, when the law is permissive, when the law doesn't control people's behavior, the other major regulating factor on human behavior is social shame. For instance, the law does not care about adultery. If a person commits adultery, the law does not care at all. They're not going to get arrested for adultery. They're not going to get put in jail for adultery. They're not even going to have the terms of their divorce, you know, altered by the fact that they have committed adultery. The law does not care. But people still do, maybe not as much as they should, but they still do a little bit. And when somebody commits adultery on their spouse, there's at least a chance that their friends or whatever maybe go, oh, that's horrible. You're a bad person for doing that. You know, I'm going to be that person's friend and I'm not going to be your friend anymore because you behaved badly. And fearing the disapproval of others is a motivating factor that causes people to limit what they do. Somebody might want to commit, they might want to cheat on their significant other and refrain because they think that their friends will think badly of them for it. And so they refrain. The law doesn't care, but society still does. However, for many, or perhaps most uses of the internet, social shame is hugely reduced, or even non-existent. The internet is anonymous. When it comes to viewing content, the whole point of it is, no one witnesses what you do. Only, you know, it's you and the computer screen. Whoever else is involved is not around to see what you are doing. All you are is an IP address. And if people get hold of your IP address, they can find out that you use Comcast. Big deal. Nobody can find out your name just by finding your IP address. And so what you're doing on the internet, it's not illegal. The government is not interested in regulating it. And nobody is around to see what you're doing. So what motivation exists to not view things basically any kind of content that you want. Never before in human history has so much information been gathered together and made accessible. Because accessing this information is virtually anonymous, we're seeing a glimpse, as of never before, of what the lowest common denominator in society really is. All of the basest and vilest of human predilections, all the things that just a few short years ago were hidden by the dark of night, are being held up before the world in bright daylight, but clouded by anonymity. And as a result of that fact, there has been a massive shift in the values that we have as a society. As recently as the 1970s, if a person wanted to watch a pornographic film, they had to go to a movie theater that would show such a thing. It would be in a seedy part of town, surrounded by disreputable people. They would do it in the dead of night. The advent of the home video market revolutionized that industry. But even then, the ready availability of such material was still limited, and for a person to hide their activities from other members of their household was difficult. Social shame was still in effect. Parental oversight was still in effect for young people having access to that material. And so because of that, until recently, even the people that supported, encouraged, and utilized things like pornography treated it as a very shameful and private thing that they didn't want anyone else to know about. With the popularization of the internet, though, anonymous browsing resulted in a huge increase in the consumption of pornography. With the acquisition of it made effortless and all practical stigma removed, no law and no social shame because nobody knows what you're doing, with all practical stigma removed, there remained very few reasons in anyone's mind why they shouldn't view it if they chose to do so. But each individual, while hiding their own activities under the guise of privacy, were still capable of recognizing that other people were probably doing the exact same thing. That fact has, by this point, actually led to the mainstream acceptance of pornography, so much so that the average internet user, or at least the average internet user on the young side of the scale, takes it completely for granted that everyone watches pornography. And they are, for the most part, right about that. In an article about an article done by the University of Montreal, researchers were conducting a study comparing the views of men in their 20s who had never been exposed to pornography with regular users. But their project stumbled at the first hurdle when they failed to find a single man who had not seen it. Here's an example of a common mindset among internet users. Someone posts a comment on a message board, and they write, "About 3 days ago, my wife got hold of my laptop and went through my history and found that I went to a porn site like 2 months ago. That is all that was there, and she hasn't spoken to me in the past 3 days at all. I think she is totally overreacting, and each day I just get angrier and angrier that she is acting like this." And here's the top-rated reply, the top-rated piece of advice that was offered that everybody else voted on and said, that's the best answer. Women like this drive me crazy. They don't realize that men, no matter how much they love and find their wives attractive, will always look at porn, always. I think it's pretty amazing that you have only looked at it once in the past 2 months. Tell her to either accept it and move on, or she will have many angry and insecure years. All people, all men anyway, at least, they all use the internet for pornography, and it's crazy to think otherwise, and if you have a problem with that, that's your problem. This is the wisdom of the world, the wisdom of the internet. The fact is that the internet is chock full of evil things like pornography is, it's not even shocking anymore. I don't mean the pornography isn't shocking, but the idea of how pervasive and how readily available it is, the knowledge that any computer with internet access can instantly show any one of a million varieties of deviance, that fact doesn't even surprise us anymore because that's the world we've been living in for a number of years now. It probably even seems weird to be talking about it. I mean, it's 2011, right? the time for lessons about the evils of internet pornography was like 10 or 15 years ago, right? If it seems strange to talk about, you know, fighting against internet pornography, it's because it's obvious to all of us that that battle was lost a long time ago. Well, if our goal were to make the internet a wholesome place, then yes, that ship has sailed. I mean, the very nature of the internet made what we are seeing now an inevitability. There would have been no point 15 years ago talking about how to keep the internet a friendlier, family-friendly kind of place. It was never going to happen based on the concept of the internet, the fact that it's based upon anonymity. But instead, today we're going to talk about some of the practical ramifications of what it means for young people today and what it means for parents trying to raise those young people. Now, I talked about pornography as an example. Suffice it to say, that is not the only evil thing on the internet. We would run out of time if I were to attempt to list every classification of bad thing on the internet. I mentioned earlier, without the law and without social shame, there's very little reason for people not to view such material. Well, that's the view of the world. If people are interested in doing right before God, we have another motive beyond the legal system and social shame. Our motive is that we hold on to scripturally based principles, and we have a sense of honor and integrity before God, and we actually want to do right. We want to stay pure from things that would pollute us, from the things that, you know, spot and stain us from the world. That's our motivation. Social shame, if you're browsing the internet by yourself, there's none of that. Legal system, they don't care. All we have is our own integrity, our own principles. We know that a thing is wrong because God sees it, even if nobody else ever knows that we are doing that. And so while it may be easy to know that we should not use the internet for pornography, there are many other things that may or may not be appropriate for us to be looking at. We each need to examine ourselves and think, should I really be spending my time on the internet engaged in this sort of activity? Philippians 4:8 says, whatever is true, honorable, just, pure, lovely, commendable, if there's any excellence, if there's anything worthy of praise, think about these things. Is that what I'm spending my time doing? Just because YouTube doesn't allow, you know, hardcore pornography on it doesn't mean that everything else it allows is fine to look at. It's not a good site. Just because there's things that they draw the line at, well, the line of YouTube is nowhere near the line for a Christian about what's appropriate to view or not. If I watch a clip of a man being gored to death by a bull in Pamplona, is that something I should really be watching? If so, why? Is that what I consider entertaining to me? The fact is, I'm responsible for everything that I allow to enter into my mind. Now, if I'm sitting at home and there's a knock on the door and I open the door and it's Lady Gaga, and she says, I want to come into your house and I want to sing a song and do a dance, should I let her in? And yet, why do we feel okay about watching that sort of thing if it's on the television or if it's on the internet? We are still responsible for whatever we allow into our homes, whatever we allow into our minds, whether anybody else is around or not, whether it's physical or just purely visual. I have to answer to God for the things that I choose to view, because I know that every single thing that I see and hear has its effect on me. 1 Corinthians 15:33 said, don't be deceived. Bad company ruins good morals. The problem with many of the evil materials on the internet is they really are tempting to people. I mean, there's a reason that they're on there. People enjoy them. Everybody has sexual desires, and pornography exists to feed that desire. Well, it's easy to say, be strong, don't give in. But the fact is, hardly anybody is really strong enough to face temptation day in and day out, knowing that no one else will ever know if they give in, and not give in even one time. Hardly anybody is strong enough to face that temptation every single day, knowing that no one will ever know if they give in, and never once give in. Most people are not that strong. The solution is not to blame lack of strength, lack of willpower. If you were stronger, you'd be able to go on the internet and never have to deal with anything bad. That is not realistic. The solution is to try to remove the sources of temptation in the first place and not have to face temptation day in and day out. James 1:14 says, "Each person is tempted when he is lured and enticed by his own desire. Desire, when it is conceived, gives birth to sin. Sin, when it is full grown, brings forth death." There have been a lot of preachers in the church that have been fired because they were found looking at dirty pictures on their church computer. Now, leaving aside the fact that they're really dumb to do it at the church computer and get caught, the fact is, it tells us one thing. Just because someone spends their time studying the scriptures, knows what the scriptures teach, is trying to be faithful to God, that does not give them superhuman powers to resist temptation day by day by day when the temptation keeps bombarding them. Genesis 39, starting in verse 6, talks about Joseph. This was referenced yesterday. "He was handsome in form and appearance. His master's wife cast her eyes on him and said, 'Lie with me.' He refused and said," and I'm summarizing here, "'How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?' And as she spoke to Joseph day after day, he would not listen to her, to lie beside her, or to be with her. One day, he came into the house to do his work. None of the other men of the house were there. She caught him by his garment, said, 'Lie with me.' He left his garment in her hand and fled and got him out of the house." Joseph ran away. When sin came knocking, he ran away. He didn't stay and talk about it. When the time came, he just took off running. So what is the main thing that enables us to be tempted by the evil material on the internet in the first place? Privacy. That's if you're in public and you don't want people to see your screen. Now, normally, I'm very much in favor of privacy. Some people don't value privacy at all. They think that the only purpose of privacy is to hide wrongdoing. All right, that's distracting. Try to liven things up, nobody listens. Normally, I'm in favor of privacy. Some people think the only reason for privacy is because you're hiding something wrong. I don't believe that. I value privacy. However, we have to admit, it sure can be used to hide wrongdoing. I consider that an abuse of privacy. Privacy, good, but abusing it by using it to hide wrongdoing, bad. Now, to me, working on the internet since 1993, it's absolutely amazing and incredible to me that any parent would allow a teenage child to have an internet connection in their room privately. I don't get that at all. I have tried to ponder. I will never understand anybody doing that. I mean, first of all, bad things on the internet, they're not even hidden. It's not like you have to go looking for something bad and try to find it. You run across bad things when you're not even trying to find bad things. The advertisements may be bad. Given that fact, even a young person, you know, we talk about gospel preachers getting fired for giving in to temptation. A teenager, not a grown man, still going through what they're going through as a teenager, that wants to do the right thing, that wants to be strong in the faith, they want to study their Bible, they want to pray, they want to go to Bible class, they want to teach their friends about God, they're going to end up facing temptations with such regularity that it's almost impossible not to slip. Now me, when I use a computer, I don't like anyone to look at my screen, any more than I like people to read a book over my shoulder. But that desire for privacy, if it's going to result in temptation and sin, is just not worth it. 1 Corinthians 10:33 says, all things are lawful, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful, but not all things build up. There's got to be a middle ground where people can write emails without everybody reading them, but also not have so much privacy that they are able to be led away by temptation and view things they shouldn't be viewing. The exact mechanics of that, how you balance privacy with protecting yourself from temptation, I leave to you. I do know that recovering internet pornography addicts, they go so far as to install software on their computer that just emails their internet history to a friend, maybe a friend they've never even met before, but it sends their history to somebody else. So whatever they do on their computer, they know that somebody else knows what they're looking at and where they've been. And just knowing that accountability exists, just knowing that fact is usually enough to stop people from looking at stuff that they shouldn't be looking at. I mean, another valuable thing is filtered content. There's software you can install that will disable the display of certain content. The company I work for has a thing called filtered DNS. You put in DNS servers in your router, and then all the computers connected to it automatically have content filtering. Which, if you can lock up your router, also prevents people from fiddling with a little bit. Although, you can always get past filtering. That's not a complete answer, but it's a tool. You can put Adblock on your internet browser. It's a plugin, goes on your internet browser, and it disables advertisements, which is nice just to disable advertisements, but some of the advertisements are not okay to be looking at. There's a thing called Flashblock that you can put on there. That stops all the stuff that moves around, the advertisements that have little videos or anything, stops those. If you want to see it, like a YouTube, you can click and it'll play, but it stops it by default, so you still have control, but you don't see a bunch of stuff that you don't even really want to be seeing. You don't accidentally view things that you know you shouldn't be viewing. Is that the answer? No, that's not the answer. It's a tool. Anyone that wants to can bypass filtering. As a parent, if you're relying on filtering to keep your child's internet browsing session safe, that is not going to work. But it's a tool, and it's a valuable tool, but it's not the only answer. For people that want to do the right thing, but they find that they're not strong enough to face the temptation day in and day out of private and unfiltered internet content, it can be very valuable. So to recap, as far as viewing immoral material on the internet goes, one, recognize what's right and wrong to view. You have to figure out, I mean, some things are easy, just never, you know, there's certain things I can never look at, you know, but there's other things that you may or may not know if that's really the sort of thing that a Christian should be spending their time on. And that's something for you to examine yourself, examine your motives and what you're viewing. Make a choice to do right and not give in to temptation. Eliminate as much of the temptation as you can by content filtering or whatever. And then finally, accountability. Don't misuse privacy in order to hide immoral activities. Using the internet in a more public setting, being in the living room instead of, you know, your private room or office, leaving your internet history viewable, and unlocked for other people to look at. These things may make it easier to develop good browsing habits. And Will Rogers said, "You should live your life so you wouldn't be ashamed to sell the family parrot to the town gossip." And final note on that subject, I know I just, as an example, I use the concept of pornography a lot. If you know somebody, or you do have a problem with the internet addiction in that way, there's an excellent book you can get on Amazon called Every Man's Battle that discusses the problems in depth. They specifically address the concept of pornography, but it would apply to anything else that you have an issue with as far as viewing immoral material on the internet. It has a lot of practical advice and solutions for that. Now, using the internet to view bad things, that's not the only danger when it comes to the internet. One thing that's frequently overlooked is just the sheer enormity of how much entertainment is available to us and how that entertainment affects us. Jesus said, "Go into all the world and make disciples." We're supposed to be teachers. We're supposed to work hard to teach others. We're supposed to work hard, provide for our families, Not a lot said in the New Testament about recreation. I don't think recreation is wrong. But we do have a limited amount of time, just in our day-to-day life, and a limited amount of time that we're here on this planet. And how much of it should we really be using for, you know, frivolity and entertaining ourselves versus how much we could be using to do some good in this world? Now, I have a wife and a child and a job. I teach 2 Bible classes. I have to preach every week. I have a house that needs work, a yard that needs work. I need to find time for Bible study and prayer. That's a lot of stuff. How much time should I be spending just fooling around on the internet? Or, I mean, there's other things you can do to fill your time. I mean, books have been around a long time. That's nothing new. I could spend my time reading books, fiction, for entertainment instead of doing some of the things I'm supposed to be doing. But, you know, that's not quite as mindless. That's a little harder to do. You know, television, that's pretty mindless. I could sit down and watch TV and zone out and veg out, and I'm de-stressing from all the stresses of the day. For 2 hours, really? It takes that long to de-stress? TV's a bad thing to get addicted to. But we're here to talk about the internet. For my money, the internet is much more addicting. There are entire websites whose only purpose is to continually update links to other websites that you can go to and find entertaining and amusing things, things to watch, and things to interact with. Now, a lot of people have internet on their computers at work. Pretty much every student uses it for schoolwork. How much time is actually spent working or studying versus how much time is spent goofing off? My boss calls it on-the-job retirement. When you're still at work, but you're not doing any work because you're fooling around on the internet. And he will stop working and call me over to his desk to show me funny things that he's found on the internet. I'm like, okay, well, he's the boss. He called me over. He knows I'm not working now, so I guess it's all right. Now, I have to admit, I had some trouble getting this lesson together. And one reason was, every time I hit a snag in my preparation, I found a million things to do on the internet, because I was already using the computer, that were just simply easier to be doing than working on this lesson. The internet didn't invent procrastination by any means, but it made the procrastination better. I mean, technology, the cause of and solution to so many problems. There exist programs specifically designed to temporarily block access to your favorite websites. When you find your self-control is not up to the task, you can find a program that will try to block access so you can focus your mind on work and what you're supposed to be doing rather than idleness. The internet has a great deal of value, as I said, but there's a lot of other things that we should also be spending our time on. And the same goes with any hobby, whether it's TV or video games or even reading books. It just seems like the internet seems to be a lot more addictive for a lot of people. Put the internet and video games together in one, and you end up with quite a problem sometimes. Only a few months ago, a 3-year-old child, well, that's wasn't in my notes, oh. That's LeechBlock. That's one of those programs that will block websites for you. So that's awfully nice. But just a few months ago, a 3-year-old child literally starved to death because her mother was spending so much time playing World of Warcraft on the internet that she didn't give her child any food to eat. Now, as in most things, moderation is the key. Nothing wrong with entertainment. Nothing wrong with amusement. But when we get addicted to it and we end up putting off the things that we know we ought to be doing because we're engaged in things that are simply easier or more fun, it becomes a problem. Now, the internet did not start out as a solitary pursuit. Since the beginning, it has been about interactivity and multi-directional communication. Email's been around since the 80s. Usenet took the place of the old school BBSs that most people here probably haven't even heard of. Today there's message boards and Facebook, and Twitter, and so on. 15 years ago, if you got an email from a friend, you were all excited. I got an email. Now if you get an actual letter, you're excited about that because you get 300 emails per day, maybe. We communicate electronically more and more. We're finding disturbing results because of that. Communicating via computer means I'm communicating with text. There's no facial expressions, there's no body language, there's no tone of voice. The result is behavior that's more than solitary, but it's less than true interpersonal communication. Combine that with the fact that most people don't just interact with their real-life friends online, but anonymous strangers in the form of message boards, chat rooms, or whatever, you end up with some problems. Research done at the University of Michigan and published in the Personality and Social Psychology Review found that college students' self-reported empathy has declined since 1980, with an especially steep drop in the last 10 years. To make matters worse, during the same period, students' self-reported narcissism has reached new heights, according to research done at San Diego State University. Empathy is the ability to understand or vicariously experience the feelings of another person. Narcissism is inordinate fascination with one's own self. Over the last 10 years especially, the ability of young people to understand and experience other people's feelings has vastly decreased, while their fascination with their own selves has vastly increased. As our communication becomes less personal, we stop seeing human faces on the other side of the computer. We end up becoming a little less human ourselves. We spend more time with ourselves, less time thinking about other people, which is the exact opposite of what Christians should actually be doing. I didn't have to go searching around to find an example of this lack of empathy. I was writing down my lesson this week, but it had been percolating in my head for a long time. But I knew that when it came time to get an example for this, that one would be ready. And sure enough, it was. Because I see it all the time. So I just picked one of the many that I ran across by chance. It happened just this last week. At the running of the bulls in Pamplona, a man taunted a bull a little bit by waving his umbrella. The bull charged, knocked the man down, and trampled and gored him to death with its horns. This was caught on video and uploaded to YouTube and lots of news sites. Oh, isn't the internet great? Anytime I want to, I can watch a man die. Well, you will probably not be surprised to hear that the vast majority of comments about the video were about how stupid the man was, how he deserved it, how the bull was awesome for doing that, and the phrase, "You mess with the bull, you get the horns," was repeated a lot by people who didn't even read the comments to know that it had been already said. People congratulated the bull, and many laughs were had by all. That was a real person with a soul, and he has a son now who doesn't have a dad anymore. Yeah, he did something really foolish. It was dumb what the guy did. That was stupid. But why is that funny? Well, it isn't funny. It shouldn't be funny. But again, the anonymous and isolated nature of the internet lends itself to that kind of thinking. It helps us dehumanize others as we turn our lens inward and focus on ourselves. Finally, speaking of social interaction, I talked earlier about how we're responsible to God for everything that we view on the internet or anywhere else in our lives. We're also responsible for the things that we post, the things that we put on there. If I'm on a message board talking about Star Wars or something with people that I don't really know, I can't let my anonymity allow me to behave in a way that is unchristian. Now, they don't know I'm a Christian. They don't know who I am. So I could say whatever I want, and it won't necessarily cause anybody to blaspheme God, because I didn't first say I'm a Christian and then behave unchristian. I just went to talk about Star Wars, and then maybe I act like a big jerk. That doesn't directly reflect on the church, so maybe that's easy to do. But the fact is, I have exactly the same responsibility to be polite, to behave honorably, to not use or condone vulgar language as I do in real life. I mean, not only that, but I am responsible for anything that has my name on it. If I've got a blog, I've got to moderate the comments on that. I can't just let any Joe Schmo write what he wants on my website. If I got a Facebook, same thing. I can't use the automated and unregulated nature of the internet as an excuse. The responsibility is still mine. My example is supposed to be above reproach, whether real life or online. It's the same. But too often, we don't view it as being the same. Of course, these days, many people, instead of using screen names on message boards, which is what everybody used to do, we talked about a lot about anonymity. Now here's the flip side. Now people use their real name on Facebook. With all my talk about the dangers of privacy on the internet, you might expect me to think that that's a good thing. But not necessarily. Many people actually put far too much personal information on the internet. The fact is, when you put things on the internet, you are putting them there for everybody in the entire world to look at. That's not necessarily really appropriate to do. Do you talk to your grandmother the same way that you talk to your friends? Do you talk to your preacher the same way you talk to your boss at work? We all speak differently to different people. There's not anything wrong with that. But when you post things publicly, you're speaking the same way to everybody. This is a Venn diagram of the awkwardness when your family gets on your Facebook and reads everything that you wrote. I knew a young lady went to another country. She blogged about her experience. The blog entry contained a rather unpleasant description of, let us say, digestive difficulties she encountered with the local cuisine. You know, that's cool if you want to tell your friends about that. I don't need to hear that. Did everybody on the whole planet need access to that? I 10 or 12 years ago, I used to go on the message boards, and I would talk with people about collecting Transformer toys. Nothing wrong with that. I'm not ashamed of that. But do I really want a future employer to Google my name and be able to find out everything about me and everything that I've done on the internet for the last 15 years and judge me on it? You spent how long talking about a little piece of plastic that turned into robots? I don't really need that. Did you know that you can still view Usenet posts from the 90s? The stuff that people, idle stuff that people posted, it's still there. You can still look up and read an entire conversation that people had from 20 years ago. There's a website called the Internet Wayback Machine. It shows snapshots of web pages that have long since died. Once something is on the internet, you have no guarantee of it ever not being on the internet again. Take a bucket of confetti on a windy day and throw it up in the air. Now go grab every little piece of confetti. You will never get them all. That's what it's like posting things on the internet. They are there forever. Young people especially, they're at risk to post personal information that they may end up haunting them years down the road. A lot of people have tried to get jobs only to not get called back for interviews because their blog shows pictures of them toking up at a party or something. Other people get fired from the jobs that they do have because their boss can go on Facebook and see pictures of them doing stuff that's detrimental to the company or in violation of rules. Even if you don't post anything that's wrong, what if you have kids someday? Do you really want your kids in the future to know everything about your life as it is right now? That's when they find out what you were up to. If you actually do think that you may value privacy someday, even if you don't right now, but you think that someday you might look back and wish that you had some privacy, take some steps now to protect it. Not everything on the internet requires your real name. That's what nicknames and screen names are for. If you've got a Facebook and it's got your real name on it, please make it private, so that only people that you actually know and have specifically selected can view it. There used to be a website called pleaserobme.com. And it scanned Facebook and Twitter. It read everything that there was on Facebook and Twitter automatically. Computers could do that. When people would tweet something like, "I'm going to a baseball game tonight," it would grab that. Then it would cross-reference that with their Facebook, grab all their personal information, find their real name and their address, and put it on the internet, and say, "This person's not going to be home tonight because they're at a baseball game." The website, if I remind you, was called pleaserobme.com. Now, fortunately, the makers of that website, that was actually designed to show you why you shouldn't. They had a big disclaimer: "We don't really say to rob people, but this is why you shouldn't post private stuff." I cannot tell you how many times that I have seen somebody And even somebody posting under a screen name, they think that they're being anonymous because they've got a screen name, but they let something slip, something that allows somebody to find their Facebook profile, some little bit of identifying info, and some internet detective with nothing better to do, once they have that, they're able to dig up all kinds of stuff to embarrass or threaten people. The solution is, don't put something on the internet if you fear its misuse. This is somebody decided, I'm going to post a picture of me and my son on the internet. And there's people whose entire hobby is to take pictures that people post and make them look foolish. It's a nice family picture, right? Let me post it on the internet so my grandma can see it. Well, do you want that done to your... Well, maybe if you do, hey, it's up to you. But if you don't, keep in mind, if you don't want something to be misused or abused, don't put it on the internet. Now, I'm probably the most paranoid person in this room when it comes to privacy. The only place my real name exists on the internet, ever, is on the website for the Airport Church of Christ, and that's only because on the audio downloads page, it says who the speakers are for past youth fellowships. I don't, as far as I know, there's never been a picture of me online, and that's the way I like it. I don't expect everybody else to feel like I feel. I know that I'm way out there when it comes to, you know, valuing privacy or whatever. But keep in mind, my living and working on the internet, I've seen how it can go wrong. There's a lot of cases of photos people post being used inappropriately. They can be photoshopped to be insulting. They can be photoshopped to be incredibly vulgar. There's people that just do that as their hobby. Or they can be used for more nefarious purposes. Many people, this is just one of the examples that I just happened to find, not the one that first heard me that this goes, let me know that this goes on, but many people have had pictures, they've posted pictures of their children on the internet, only later to find out that some pervert has downloaded the pictures of their children and then used them to create a fake Facebook profile where they pretend to be that child and do whatever perverted things that they do when they have that. So that's why when people say, hey, email me pictures of your daughter, I say, no, but I'll print them and mail them to you through the postal service, but I won't send them via email. That's why. It's just not worth the risk to me. You know, other people could decide differently, but my experience with the internet has led me, I don't like to put stuff on there, knowing what can be done with it. You may or may not have seen a picture of this kid, the Star Wars kid. This for a while, if you may know of it, this was the most famous internet meme that there was. This young man, when he was in high school, was videotaped swinging a pole around like it was a lightsaber. And it was posted on the internet as a video without his permission, and it pretty much ruined his life. It went viral, and for a while it was the most popular video on the entire internet, and there was no place that he could go that he wasn't recognized and people didn't make fun of him. So be careful what you choose to put out there. I apologize for going over time. I'm gonna stop now. I haven't really even scratched the surface of the topic. And there's many other horrible things about the internet that we're not even going to even address. But I hope the things that we have talked about today will give you some things to think about. Ultimately, it's our responsibility to think on things that are honorable, things that are noble, things that are spiritual. And it's up to each of us to decide if our activities are doing that or not. Not just on the internet, but everything that we do in our lives. At this time, I'd like to offer forward an invitation. If there's anyone here who is not a Christian, if you're not a Christian, then when Jesus came and gave his life and shed his blood so that everybody that has a soul would be considered valuable, so that everybody could repent of their sins and be saved by him, regardless of what they have done in the past. That's why Jesus came. And if you're not a Christian, then you haven't taken advantage of that offer. We offer that to you this morning. If you are a Christian and you have stumbled, if you have strayed, if you have let temptations get the better of you, It's not too late to turn that around. It's not too late to make some real changes in your life. If you need the prayers of the people in the congregation, we ask that you come. While together we stand and sing the song that Brother Melvin has selected.